Welcome everyone to another episode of Life Chat with Viv and Bill. Bill and I are so excited to have these guests here with us today, and we are also excited that this is a month that we decided to talk about money, finances. We are talking about finances. We know this month normally is a tax season month that you got to get that taxes done, but the government has decided to switch it to, I think, May 15th. Is that correct, ladies? Yeah,
yes.
May 15th. So anyway, we're still going to do finance, talk about finances this month. And this day we have two extraordinary ladies with us, and they will introduce themselves and tell you where they work, their family, whatever they want to share with our audience today. So welcome, ladies, to our show.
We're thank
happy,
you.
Very happy to have you here today. So who yeah, wants
thank
to start?
You. I'll go. So I am Janelle Poole Davis. I go by the Mid-Atlantic Mortgage Girl as my brand, and I've been helping people purchase and finance homes since 1999, so coming up on 22 years. And I love what I do because some people come to me with a situation and they have a goal, so it's up to me to put the pieces of the puzzle together and try to find a good solution for them. A little bit of my background, I'm a business major by nature, so I'm very much into business and I love small business. We have a blended family, so we have four daughters from 19 down to 12. We have twin daughters as well. They're 12. And I just really just love helping people. So I love to educate. I love to just discuss things. And if people come to me with whatever it is across the spectrum of credit, financing, budgeting, personal finance, anything like that, I love to just help them get to that next level of what their goal might be.
Thank you.
And I'm Jacqueline Greenwich-Nix, and I am so happy to talk to people about money. I do it for a living. I am actually in a nonprofit organization, and I take care of all their finances. And I have spent many years working with small businesses and individuals. And one of the passions that I have had is for helping people understand money. I have a degree in a master's in business administration, but not one of my classes were dealt with personal finances. And I think that personal finances can either make you or break you. And so I have been committed over the years to teaching what God has to say about money, which is a whole lot, and just helping people to understand how to manage what they have and to bill for the future. So I have two daughters in college at this point in time, and I am, you know, teaching them a lot of things because college graduates can also be in a mess with their finances. So very much so. So that's about it for the time being.
Yep. Thank you guys very much. So we have the best with us. Mm-hmm. You guys are well rounded in what you do. So I know our audience will be learning a lot from listening to this podcast today. So you want to ask the first question, Vivian? Or do you want me to go ahead?
Okay.
You know, I always like to talk. They like to teach, I like to talk. Okay, so this question is for you, Janelle. Why is it important to be talking about finance, especially in this time that we find ourselves in with the pandemic going on? Who cares about money? Is it overrated? Why do I have to plan? I ain't going nowhere. What if you were asked that question?
I think now more than ever, it's important to plan, because if this year hasn't shown us anything, it's how uncertain things are and how unpredictable our futures are. Mm-hmm. So I think money always needs to be kind of at the forefront of our minds when we're just going about our daily lives. It's really important to budget properly, not get in over our heads, and have reserves in case they're needed. This year has been a big year of job loss, and we've seen that in this business and in every, you know, in it, everywhere. I have dealt with it directly when people come to me and they've had such huge job gaps, we call them, where it's just been a huge amount of time that they have not had work. Now the unemployment has helped, and the increase in the regular unemployment has helped people bridge the gap. So for the most part, the people that I've talked to have been okay, but it's really important too, just to be smart about your financial decisions and to make sure you have some solid ground back before you go and make major financial decisions too. I've had a couple of families where they've been back to work for a week and they're ready to buy a house. I'm like, don't you want to make sure you don't, that it's solid ground you're on first? So there's a lot of educating and coaching in what I do, but definitely uncertain times we've seen now, all of us. So it's really important to plan and have those reserves, I think.
Wonderful. Great. And I'm going to ask you, Jacqueline, how did you get into this business of finance? Was this always a passion for you?
Thank you for asking, Vilma. I have realized that we all have a story with money. we all have a relationship with money, and it's important to know our relationship and our story, our history with money. And from a very early age, my mom entrusted me with her very limited dollars to do grocery shopping. And so I found I was good at getting the best prices. And I probably was like 13 or 14, but she trusted me to go to the grocery store and get groceries. And I then just realized that everywhere I went, I ended up being the treasurer, or I ended up taking care of money. And I decided, you know, I think this is something that I'm good at managing. And so I just started on a journey of helping my family. And then I was in church for a very long time. And I saw how often people, Christians, they disrespect and disregard for money. And, you know, we have God, we don't need money, but God uses money. And so he wants you to be responsible. And so I started teaching some small financial classes and what the Bible have to say about money. You know, there are over 2,000 verses that deals with money and possession in the Bible. So I think God had a little bit of interest in talking to us about that. So it has been a journey of my personal commitment to good managing, being a good steward of my resources and helping people to do likewise.
Very good. Great. Thank you.
I know you guys are on two different standpoint when it comes to how you're approaching finances and where your secret sauce is, I should say, or whatever that you have that you deal with on a day-to-day. Now, I know with you, Janelle, you are more on the mortgage end because you call yourself the mortgage girl. and basically, people come to you when they want a mortgage or when they want a home, and you, Jacqueline, is more on the portion where you help people to budget to get to the point where they need to talk to Janelle?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. So now let's deal with that. Let's say, for instance, I'm a person who I need a home, and I'm making, you know, just hypothetical, we're just giving a case that we can set it up that the audience can be able to understand where we're coming from. You know, Vilma just asked a good question. Why is it important to save money? And you guys gave a really great answer. But now, okay, I saved my money and I got my stimulus package, and I'm ready to think that I want to relocate from New York or wherever it may be, or Delaware to Florida. And what would you say to an individual saying, okay, I want to able to save to purchase a home? What would you say to that particular person, Jacqueline? What would you tell them the key things that they need to look for, or key things that a person need to do in order to put themselves in a position to talk to someone like Janelle? And then we're going to go back to Janelle with that question and taking it from that standpoint.
So I always start with people's relationship with money, because if you have a, for want of a better word, if you have a bad relationship with money, it will follow you and it will impact your life on a daily basis. So I, when I would counsel people, I would first get an idea of how they their relationship with money. And then I, from there, when they're clear about how they relate to money and what role money plays in their life, I start to talk about how you're spending your money, what your priorities are. People don't like to hear the word budgeting, so I try to get them to think about, this is a pool of resources that you have. How do you want to see that allocated? These are some realities you have. These expenses, some of them are fixed, some of them are flexible, but these are the expenses. These are the dollars that you have to meet those expenses. How are you allocating those dollars? You know, savings are very important, but if you just have savings and you don't, and that's a short-term situation, then you can run out of money. You know, job come and job goes. So I talk to people about where they put their these savings, whether it's emergency savings. You know, we are going through this pandemic, and people, you know, we recommend people have 3 to 6 months of after-tax income. But we realize that this has been a year, so that would have even run out before then. But at least they would have something to fall back on. So if you want to go buy a house, like, do you have more than the down payment? You know, will you be in the house for a short period of time and then lose the house if your income is not stable? You know, you need to give yourself the grace to know that you will get things, but it might take a little longer. You know, and that's that whole relationship with money. Do you do well with deferred gratification? Are you willing to forego the trip to the Bahamas this year, in order to retain that extra $2,000 to build your nest egg towards your home? So I talk to people about their relationship, what their goals are, and what are they willing to sacrifice, or what are they willing to include into their financial lives. So that's something I talk to people about when they're looking to make big decisions like a home. And Janelle will tell you more how big a decision that is and the impact it can have on people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let me ask it this way. What qualifies an individual for a mortgage?
Okay. So there's four things we look at very early on. So the number one thing that I look at or ask about when I'm talking to a person that's interested in buying a home is credit. And credit is the way that you have paid. It demonstrates for us the way that you have paid and managed your finances in the past up until now. And that does go back to your relationship with money, because that gives us a very good snapshot of how you do with that. It really gives a person's sense of character in a small snapshot. Now, for the most part, we'll just say generally speaking, there are people that have some hardships, which may be part of their credit file, but you can recover from that too. So credit is very, very big. And that goes along with how you manage your life and how you manage your finances. The next thing we talk about is your your income, employment, and your monthly debt. So we calculate a debt to income ratio to figure out how much room you actually have for qualifying for a home. And then the third thing we ask about are those assets. And that goes with, that would be down payment and closing costs. Those are two different things. That's a big misconception among home buyers. They think when we say down payment that it covers all of it, but it actually is two separate things. So I really like to educate on the first phone call about that. And then the reserves that you'll have after the fact, because if an emergency pops up and now you're now a homeowner, you're that much more responsible than if you rented. So those are like the four areas that we cover in the first 10 minutes of anyone looking now or in the future to buy a home and want to have that conversation. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yes, yes. You guys are similar. So I think we, for those of you who are listening to us, first you want to speak to a person like Jacqueline before you go to Janelle. So you avoid, you know, having to the same questions, similar questions asked, and you not getting the mortgage. So the counseling, I think, is important before you decide to go for the mortgage.
Definitely.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. So the things that we need to think about, you mentioned their credit, their income, employment, their monthly debt, having a down payment, and a reserve. Did I miss anything?
That pretty much covers it.
Yes, yes, very good, very good. In terms of getting a mortgage, where does credit score lies and how important is, because I've heard different views on a credit score.
So here are a couple of my views. There's a big difference between the terms you'll get at a 780 score and a 640 score in a couple of different situations. It can be as much as, off the top of my head, a couple hundred dollars a month on an average priced home at say 250 or 300,000. So that is a lot. With that being said, sometimes and oftentimes it still does make sense to become a homeowner versus renting for another 2 or 3 or 4 years, because the best and easiest way to build wealth as an American is through home ownership because of the appreciation and the amortization. So you're buying a property that does appreciate on the average over time about 3% a year, and that adds up over the years by a lot. It's exponential. And then the amortization, which is the pay down of the mortgage. So those two together create wealth. So a lot of time, so credit is very important, and the better you do with it, the better your terms will be. With that being said, even if you have a 640 and it's a little bit more to buy a mortgage, oftentimes, in my opinion, it still makes sense because prices are just going up. So it's gonna be more expensive over the next 5 years to become a homeowner. So you may as well get in and build that appreciation and that wealth, because equity in a home, which is the difference between the value and what you owe, is that's cash value. So those are my two perspectives on that.
Okay, I have heard it said that why improve your credit score? You improve your credit score just to get yourself in more debt. How do you see that? If you can answer.
Well, your credit score, improving your credit score to get a mortgage is not just about getting the mortgage. Your credit score impacts your insurance, it impacts any other, your ability to access credit card. It has such a wide range effect on your life that it's never just about wanting. That's the measure by which our financial world and our society measures whether or not we have access to resources. So yeah, you want to do that, even though you might be getting into debt. You're actually putting yourself in a better position, because you know you're gaining equity in the house, and it will help improve your credit score also, and that will also increases your the opportunity, you know, to take care of other things in life. You need a car, your kids are in college, all of those kind of things. You can leverage from there.
Makes a whole lot of sense. Thank you.
I do want to actually talk about improving your credit score to get into more debt. So this does come up sometimes. Some people really want to pay cash for everything, which does make sense to me, to not be in debt, right? And the reason that, so sometimes people come to me with not only just a low score, but no score. And from a standpoint of lending, it's very hard for a lender to want to take a risk on someone that has no score, because they have no idea how they'll manage any type of debt. Even if they have the means to do it, they don't have a picture of will they do it every month. Even if they have the money, some people just aren't disciplined to remember to do it every month. And a credit score, that's what it shows us. So even if you just had three small lines that you bought a sandwich at Wawa with and then paid off, or got some gas for your car and then paid off, we can then tell that you know how to access credit and manage it properly. So that's a big question. People are like, why do I need to get debt to buy a house? It would seem like you would be proud of me for not having any debt. So it's just one of those things that that's the only way we can get a picture of how people are gonna manage their, you know, $1,000 or $1,500 mortgage payment every month. We need to know they're gonna sit down and make sure that gets paid. So that's what I wanted to add about that.
Okay.
Now, what's the lowest, say, for instance, I know some people is like, well, you know, my credit is not good. Is there any ways that you can able to help an individual who has a low credit score, say under 600?
Sure, there's a number of different ways. The easiest way for me is if there is credit card debt on the credit, is if you pay that down below 33% of the actual credit limit, you can get a good amount of points doing that. Credit is a very mysterious thing. So it's being recalculated all the time based on usage and payment history, length of time. It's being recalculated constantly. So if I give advice to pay down credit cards, it's really in the short term of the next 30 days. If you do it like this week, then your score should go up, you know, if we pulled it again in 2 weeks. It's very hard to give a plan, and then because people are doing all kinds of things, like something else could come onto the credit after I just advised them, and that's going to go into the factor of their score as well. But the biggest and easiest thing they could do is pay down their revolving credit card debt to under 33% of all the limits across the board, and that should give a pretty decent boost. Sometimes people have old stuff and not enough new good stuff, and that sometimes just keeps them at a level that we just can't break through without any new credit paid well. So it's very individualized, but if I were to say one thing, it would be to pay all your credit card debt below 33% threshold of the limit.
You mentioned good stuff. So what's the good stuff? You said it gives good stuff and bad stuff. What's the difference between what's the good stuff and what's the bad stuff?
Okay, so credit, good stuff is credit, which would be a car loan, mortgage, auto loan, credit card, all paid on time and over a long period of time. Bad stuff would be if you had a collection. A lot of times, the bad stuff I'm referring to are like old medical collections. They're just kind of sitting there, not getting paid. if you don't do anything new to establish new credit and you just leave bad stuff on there, it just keeps your score down. Payment history and paying on time is the number one thing. So even if you had, you know, if you had a late 8 months ago, we need some time from that late to, so that it kind of triggers the credit to know that you're back on track. Cause it's not, even if you know you're back on track, it's not going to realize you are until there's a significant amount of time between a late payment and all of the payments being paid on time. Mm-hmm. I could go on for hours about credit. There's just not enough time in a day.
Okay, thank you. So what I'm hearing is that the lower your credit score, the more interest you have to pay on the loan. Is that correct? The loan is at a higher interest rate?
Yes, definitely.
Wow, so it makes sense. You improve that credit score, you know, but then as you say, you know, it securing the home gives you more leverage and puts you in a better position. Okay. What would, how would people find you if they were coming to get advice from you to purchase a home?
The easiest way is to go to my website, which is midatlanticmortgagegirl.com. Mm-hmm. That has all of my contact information, including my email and my phone numbers. That's the easiest, probably the easiest thing to remember. People seem to remember that name. And they can email or message me directly through the website or email or text me, whatever is easiest for them.
Is there a fee involved with the initial consultation? No fee involved. Okay. Very good. How has mortgage loan been during this pandemic? Because there is a view that people are acquiring more homes. And during the pandemic, they are owning more than they did prior to the pandemic. Can you verify that or speak to that?
It's been a very, very busy time. I have been sitting at this desk for sometimes 12 to 16 hours on many, many days over the past, since last February. Rates started to drop really low last February, right before the pandemic. And then they even got lower after the initial fear of the pandemic was over. So into March and then into the summer. There are so many buyers in the market, and what's happening is it's driving up prices because the supply is so low. So we actually have 30% less supply of homes on the market than we did last year. And they're staying on the market. I think the average is very short, like 20 days.
Wow.
Which is really short. So the other thing that we're seeing, which will demonstrate this market, is in Newcastle County, Delaware, and I'm in Cecil County, Maryland, but Newcastle County is much more densely populated. So I can say Newcastle County, what's happening is people are putting their house on the market. They're getting anywhere from 12 to 20 offers in 3 days, and they are getting offers up to $50,000 over the listing price. So what buyers are doing, it is absolutely insane. And what buyers are doing is they are saying that even if it doesn't, the buyers that win are putting in the contract, even if it doesn't appraise, I'm going to pay the difference between what it appraises and what I said I would buy it for. So hopefully that works out for them. In the long run, the good news is that supply is so low that prices should hold for a number of years because of the amount of buyers in the market. And what we do when we get an understanding of how many buyers are going to be in the market, we look back 34 years and look at the birth rates back then, because the average first-time home buyer today is 34 years old. So 34 years ago, there was a boom in births. So it should be good for like 5 years as far as pricing goes. I'm a conservative. I'm very conservative with my money. So even back in 07, when they were saying finance to 100% and do an ARM and all that, like that's not the way I operate, because I'm more of like a very big picture thinker. So even so, I don't know that I would go make an offer of $50,000 over a list price. People are doing it though. That's what we're dealing with. I recommend at least talking to a professional who can do a market analysis and say, even if this house appraised or appreciated at an average rate of appreciation, is it a smart financial decision? Like, where will you be five years from now at an average appreciation? And if they are able to if they're able to recapture the amount they overpaid and break even in 5 years, then maybe it's okay. But I think it's a discussion that really needs to be had. We don't. Mm-hmm. I would never recommend buyers go in and just do those kinds of crazy things, even mm-hmm. though that is happening. It's not mm-hmm. by the advice of myself.
Right.
That's serious stuff. And if there's a pullback in pricing down the line, you have to be aware and prepared. Or if you want to move and now you're underwater by $30,000, what is your plan? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that's the whole thing about talking about money. Why should we talk about money? These are the kinds of reasons why.
Wonderful. That is so good. What created the shortage? Such a shortage of homes?
Sellers are staying in their homes longer. Mm-hmm. By nature, and I believe that it's because after the scare of the mortgage meltdown, so many people were foreclosed on, so they are just staying in their homes longer, where back then they were in and out of their houses in just a couple years, the average buyers. Mm-hmm. So you'll have some that just are long-term homeowners of the same home. But they're staying in their homes longer than they were back then. And that's a big one. And then the pandemic, people were actually scared to put their home on the market because they didn't want people coming through the house. Mm. And then also sellers are also scared it's kind of creating this cycle where sellers are also scared. If I put my house on the market now, Where am I even gonna, why would I sell my house before I know if I'm even going to get under contract now? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that's all part of it. I think that covers a good portion of it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. You have anything to add to that, Jacqueline?
I would say that people have to be really thoughtful about, people do things on impulses and people do things on trends and all of that. I would say that it would be advisable to be wise in your decisions. You don't know the future. None of us do. And we should, we need to make some bold steps sometimes. But I think that it is also very important that people look at their savings and they look at the other parts of their lives that need to be taken care of, retirement, the college, healthcare, health and stuff like that, that they treat their lives with a full picture view of their lives. Housing is tremendously important. It determines it can determine so many factors, the resources that you get access to, the kind of education your kids get. Mm-hmm. So it is important, but it's not the only important thing in your finances. And sometimes people get all caught up in, I have to have a house, I have to have this size house, I have to have it in this location and all of that. But they need to be holistic in their approach mm-hmm. to where they spend their money.
Sound. So me wanting to move to California, that's what, a bad move?
It might be, unless you won the lottery or something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay, for those of you who know me, I am not going anywhere, my listening audience. I'm staying put. Okay.
Janelle, I want to ask you, what's the frequent thing that you find that a lot of people don't know that you wish that they were able to? I know you mentioned about the credit thing before, that they would able to know before they come to you. Like, they're like, oh, I wish these people would just think about these things first before they actually thinking about coming to me. So what's the frequent things that you would say, I would want you guys to know this before you think about getting a mortgage, before you think about getting a home? What's the frequent thing that you say, oh, you need to really get to know this first or do this first? Everyone tells a story too, it doesn't matter, whatever you want to say.
So yeah, we actually have a list of, it's called the 10 commandments of buying a home. So there's a list of 10 common things to not do or to make sure you do. I would say the thing that people get most frustrated with buying a home, once we get past that initial part of qualifying, is proving where their money is coming from to buy the home. So there's this thing in mortgage lending, which is called sourcing and seasoning. So we have to prove, so with mortgages, we're dealing with government agencies. So we have to prove that the money is legal money. So they make us document it all the way back to the original source. So we have to know if your money is coming from your payroll, or you've had it saved, or is if it's coming from a gift. So a couple things. We do need to know up front whether it's a gift or your own money. Some people like to tell us, like towards the end, oh, well, actually I'm getting a gift now. And that does really make a difference. It could actually take you from being approved to not approved. In mortgage lending, if it's your own money, it's less risky of a loan because you've actually saved and you're going to invest your own money. So you're more likely to pay your mortgage if you do that. If you get a gift from family, that isn't your own money, that was handed to you. So statistics show that you're slightly less likely to pay your mortgage. And that's general, but it makes sense, right? Anything you haven't worked for and invested in, it may not hold as dear to your heart, really. So we need to know these things up front about the money. And people think like, why is it any of your business as long as I have the money there on the day of settlement? So those are a couple of reasons why. And then any money that is yours for over 60 days is considered seasoned. So we don't actually have to go back any further than 60 days unless there was a big deposit within that 60-day period. So people get really frustrated that we ask for bank statements, and that then when we see a deposit about two months ago, that we need to go back further and see where it came from. So I would recommend keep trying to get your money in one spot and leaving it there for as long as you possibly can, because that's the number one frustration with any home buyer, is documenting their funds. And then so recently, I'll tell you a story. We had a couple, they had 9 bank accounts that they were transferring. So they would get some money, they would have money coming in to say 4 of them, and they would transfer in and out to all 9 accounts. And they needed almost every penny to buy the home from these accounts, between what we required for the down payment, the closing costs, and the reserves that were required for this. So they got super frustrated with us constantly asking to give us more, to go back and get documents. And it was like a huge, huge maze. And honestly, they did it to themselves because they wouldn't stop transferring money. So you want to get your money in one spot and try to keep it there for as long as you can. And you'll save yourself a lot of frustration. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that helps.
So what's the 10 things? You said there
were 10. So do not change jobs in the middle of your mortgage application. Some people think that if they get a promotion and change employers, that's a good thing. I'd say always communicate with your mortgage lender. A lot of people get really impulsive and eager to like buy furniture before they settle. And they go into furniture stores and the furniture store says, well, it's you know, you can borrow this amount for 12 months, no interest, and they get talked into opening a line of credit to, and then it's like, same as, why not, you know, and they just get caught up in the moment. They want to fill their house when they settle. So they open that line of credit without thinking. Now we credit monitor until the day of closing. So it could come up, and it really might come up. So I wouldn't do that. If we figure out you have a new line of credit, whether it be a car or new furniture or whatever, we have to send it back to underwriting. They have to recalculate your debt ratio. And you may, at that point, you may or may not be approved anymore. And at the very least, it just throws you back, because we have to take a step back to get it reapproved and go forward. So don't quit your job either. People have gone all the way to the settlement, have quit their job and didn't tell us and thought we wouldn't find out. So, it sounds like common sense, and you would think that it would be common sense, but people just aren't, they're not thinking. They might think I have enough money and I know I'm going to get another position, so it's no big deal. But it actually is a big deal. Income is very important when qualifying for a mortgage, and that's income. So it's not just savings, but it's actually money coming in regularly. Don't co-sign for anyone. That's a big one. People think I'm just co-signing. I'm not responsible because they're paying, not thinking that each party is 100% responsible. Those are all I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, they don't know. I didn't even think about the furniture one. That's a good one, because I'm buying a new house. I need new furniture. Do you have anything to add, Jacqueline, to that?
No, she covered it. Wow.
Well, thank you, ladies. This has been a great show. And as Vilma said, this is really good information, and we real definitely want you guys back on, maybe individually, because being that you guys have so many different things they could talk about. You know, Jacqueline, you could talk about the college and break things down or from a biblical standpoint. And Janelle, you have so much to talk about those 10 commandments and more in regards to, obtaining a home and mortgages and so forth, and refinancing and everything that has to deal with that whole world. So we really appreciate you guys for coming on and doing this segment of this two-part segment with us. We really definitely appreciate it. So until next time, this is Life Chat with Vivendale.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.